Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. I'm the aptly named host. We're always talking here about big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I very much hope that you were with me last week when we had the 9/11 effect. Christine Cronin, president of nycharities.org, was with me to discuss the first online giving responses to the attacks and what's changed as a result and lessons learned from then. Also, I had David Campbell, professor of public administration at Binghamton University. He also had firsthand experience on 9/11 from his work at Community Service Society in New York City. We talked with David about his opinion piece in the Chronicle of Philanthropy, The Lessons of 9/11 Philanthropy a Decade Later. This week, we're learning office lease lessons. First, we're going to talk through the walkthrough. How do you find the best space and use different spaces to strategically head into your lease negotiations? Our expert is George Grace, president of GE Grace & Company, who has done exactly this type of work for dozens of nonprofits. Then, what lease terms do you need to be careful about, and what are the negotiating points? Attorney Robert J. Smith and Kate Pala, executive director of Dance New Amsterdam, are going to talk through the dance company's less than desirable lease to bring out some lessons to help you get the best lease next time. In between those segments, it'll be Tony's Take Two, as always, at roughly 32 minutes after the hour. A little talk about my stand-up comedy, which is on my blog, and also the Next Gen Charity Conference, where we're going to be media partners. We're live tweeting today's show. If you're on Twitter, use hashtag nonprofitradio to join the conversation on Twitter. Our producer, Sam, will be monitoring that for us. If you prefer the phone, it's so 1998, but if you prefer the phone, we're at 877-480-4120. We take a break, and then when we come back, learning office lease lessons, I'll be joined by George Grace. So stay with me.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello, I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking Alternative.
Welcome back to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. I'm joined now by George Grace, Esquire. He founded GE Grace & Company in 1995. He has over 25 years of experience in commercial real estate. He represents many nonprofits and companies in their real estate transactions. George is with me to help me with the first segment of learning office lease lessons. George Grace, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Oh, good afternoon, Tony.
It's a pleasure to have you. It is afternoon. George has been drinking, but he seems cogent, and I'm sure he'll get through the segment just fine. Plus, we have a break in a few minutes. George, why do nonprofits usually need to examine a new space? What leads them to that?
Oh, several reasons. Firstly, there you have a lease that's expiring, so that lease has to either be renegotiated or they have to move. Secondly, they're growing rapidly, and they need to get at the space doesn't work for them anymore. It's too small, so they need more space. Or thirdly, they're shrinking, and the space is too big, and they're paying a lot of money for space that they're not using.
Okay.
So those are typical reasons.
Right. Hopefully not shrinking, but I imagine you've seen more of that now than you had, say, 2 years ago.
Well,
nonprofits reducing?
You know, I've seen a lot of the nonprofits that I've worked with recently actually have expanded because there's an opportunity in the marketplace because the rents have come way down. So they see an opportunity to expand and get a bigger footprint. The tendency with nonprofits is if they have the space, they'll fill it with a use. So for a lot of the small, I would say the smarter nonprofits are going out and trying to expand now because now's the time to get cheap space.
Okay. Oh, excellent. All right. Now, your advice is that you have to be willing to leave the space that you're in. So let's talk a little about your strategy. Why is that?
Well, whether you're going to renew the lease or your intention is to move from where you are, you have to go through the same process.
Okay.
If you want to stay in the space you are in, and you want to renegotiate the lease with the landlord, in order to best do that, you have to go out into the marketplace, find other alternatives that you're willing to move to. That is the key. And then use that as leverage against your present landlord and say to him, basically, if you don't give me a great deal, I'm moving across the street because the landlord across the street, his building is half empty and is dying to have me, and he's doing all this, giving me all these concessions and benefits. So either you lower the rent or we're moving.
Okay, excellent. So definitely develop alternatives to where you are and then use those as leverage, like you said. Now, we have two attorneys on the show today, so I'm very conscious of jargon jail.
Hold on to your wallet.
Plus, we locked up the valuables. Sam did that before you guys got here. Okay, a landlord. Now, by landlord, you mean a building owner, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, let's distinguish that from a nonprofit that might be looking to rent from an existing tenant that would make them a subtenant.
A sublease.
Okay. Go ahead. Is the strategy, I'll ask you, is the strategy different if you're talking to a landlord, which is the owner, versus talking to and negotiating with an existing tenant that you're going to sublet from?
Yes.
Okay, how is
that? Well, because there's two things. The tenant that's subleasing space has a different set of incentives than the owner does. The owner has his incentives or her incentives is to make sure that their building's full, that they have long-term leases, preferably, so they can refinance the property.
Okay.
Because many owners, and every owners have different incentives, but the mainstream usually wants to get their buildings full, they refinance the building, and then take out money tax-free.
We're going to talk about that refinancing in a few minutes an incentive, but that's the owner.
That's the owner's incentive. The tenant that's subleasing has a lease which has a certain term, certain number of years. It's not forever, like the owner owns it forever. The tenant only owns it for 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. So that he has a wasting asset. A longer-term lease has more value for a tenant subleasing it than a short-term. If you only have a year left on your lease, who wants to move in for just a year and then not know if beyond that year they can stay? So the value of that is diminished.
That's what you mean by a wasting asset?
Yes. Okay. So the shorter the asset, the shorter the length of the term, the less value that lease has.
Okay. So as an organization or any tenant, it doesn't have to be an organization, as any tenant, as the lease starts to come toward its end, they get anxious about getting someone in there because they know that the shorter their time period that they have left, the less desirable that lease becomes for other people to move in.
Yes. And so they're in a position to be much more flexible in terms of their rent. You know, the shorter the lease term is. If they have if they're subleasing for 9 years, for example, then you know that's virtually like being a landlord. So they're it's not as it's still a fairly good asset,
right?
But if it's 1 year, Well, and they're not using the space. Well, we'll sublease it for whatever we can get.
They're desperate to get someone in.
Found money.
This is the kind of detail we're going to be talking about. We're talking about learning office lease lessons with George Grace of GE Grace & Company. We'll take a break and stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Hi, this is psychic medium Betsy Cohen, host of the show The Power of Intuition. Join me at talkingalternative.com Mondays at 11 a.m. Call in for a free psychic reading. Learn how to tune into your intuition to feel better and to create your optimum life. I'm here to guide you and to assist you in creating the life that you deserve. Listen every Monday at 11 a.m. on talkingalternative.com.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking about learning office lease lessons with George Grace. George, before the break, you were talking about having to be willing to leave, even if you really maybe don't want to leave. So are we talking about bluffing the place where you currently are? Is that fair or no?
You can consider it a bluff if your true intention is never to walk out the door. But if you really want to press the rents down, you have to be willing to walk. The stronger you are in that position, if you really are willing, it's very easy. If you're bluffing, there's always a tension. And you have to, because the landlord may say, you know what, go.
May call your bluff.
So, Right. Okay. So you know, that's a gamble, and you have to do it very strategically. I'll give you one example. One time we were looking, the landlord had come in to visit the tenant, and the tenant blurts out, well, we want to stay. We have no intention of leaving. Okay. That is giving your negotiating position away.
You sort of revealed your cards.
Yes, okay. That cost him thousands of dollars.
So to generate these alternatives, the first step, I guess, is to figure out what you need. Is that right?
Yes.
Let's talk about that. How do you figure that out?
Well, there's a variety of variables that you have to look at. The first one is, how many square feet do you need? That's the first one that everybody looks at, and everybody has sort of a, you know, basic understanding of how many square feet they need or think they need. But that's one variable of many.
Okay.
Depending on what the use is. If it's straight office use, that's one thing. If you have specialized clients that come in that need certain access after hours. Handicap access. If you work 24/7, you want to be in a building that provides 24/7 of air conditioning and access. You may want a lot of security because you're handling money, so you want to make sure the building is secure. There's a lot of other aspects, in the operation of the building that will affect your organization. So you want to make sure that the building can accommodate what you're doing. Sort of the technical specification of what you're doing have to be met before you even look at the cost. Because if you can't operate in the building, there's no sense in making an offer. The price is irrelevant. You can't operate. So the first thing you want to do as an organization is define what you need and what the critical elements of your space are that are absolutely necessary in order for you to operate. Then you go out into the marketplace and see what's available that meet those criteria.
Okay. Since the first thing that people think of, and clearly not should not be the last thing, but since the first is the square footage, is there a way of determining how much square footage we need?
Well, a good rule of thumb that I use is usually around 200 square feet per person. Now, that rule of thumb is actually coming down a little bit because people are using space much more efficiently. You don't see everybody getting offices. The cubicles, instead of being 8x6 cubicles, are now 5x6 cubicles. So people are, and sometimes they go to desk space instead of actual cubicles, which makes it a 4x4 space for a person. So, but as a general rule, you're not going to be wrong by using 200. You'll have plenty of space. Now, you may whittle that down to 150 or 175 per person because you have to also take into account you have common areas, you have circulation space, you have bathrooms, you have conference rooms, kitchens.
Okay.
All that adds into that number.
And one of the things that you mentioned is the population that the nonprofit might be serving. They may have special needs. They also might be a special population that a building might find that they don't really want that population, for whatever reason, coming through the building during regular hours, something like that.
I have a great example of that. I represented a day school here in Manhattan, and they have kids, you know, kindergarten age kids and younger coming in baby carriages.
Mm-hmm.
Most buildings are horrified when I told them they didn't want that population in there at all, even though they're not offensive in any way. They're rather cute at times.
Yeah.
But we had to find a building that actually could accommodate them, and it was few and far between. The other, they had also another requirement that they needed open space. Try getting open space in Manhattan, but that's a requirement of the law in New York State for a day school. Well, I found them a building with a roof, a three-story building with a wide-open roof that they converted into a schoolyard.
Okay.
So, but that's the type of thing where it was a needle in a haystack. How many buildings would allow that, you know, 100 children into the building and have rooftop space for them? Very unusual. But those are the requirements that they had to operate. And unless they had them, they couldn't go into the building.
Right. It makes no sense. As you said, it makes no sense to explore space that doesn't meet your basic,
right,
your basic needs. I think lawyers would be another undesirable population. If you had a lot of lawyers on your staff, that that could be could work against you as a potential tenant. You know,
they can be helpful sometimes.
Lawyers are always a safe target.
You're arrested.
You can almost never get in trouble making fun of lawyers. I've learned on stage. Okay, so now that you've got your needs defined, yes, but of course lawyers can be enormously helpful, like you and Robert Smith are today. You've defined your needs. Now you go out and look for it, right?
Yes.
Okay. How do you find the spaces and the buildings that meet your needs?
Well, what typically happens is if I meet an executive director of an organization, they'll say, well, we need 15,000 square feet. And I say, well, how do you know that? Well, I know it's 15,000 square feet. You know, let's go look at some spaces. And that's the first reaction. People want to get a visceral reaction. They want to see and touch stuff. You know, before you start going into the numbers about, do you really need that many square feet? And what kind of air conditioning are you looking for? How are you operating? No one's interested in the details in the beginning.
They want to get out.
They want to look. They want to walk around. They want to get out of the office. They want to see stuff. And it actually serves a purpose, even though it's, in some sense, it's a waste of time because they don't know what they want. They don't, you know, why you look at things if you don't know what you really want. But it does serve a purpose in the sense that they get a sense of the type of space they like. They like loft space. They like normal office space with drop ceilings. dark space. Sometimes companies like dark space because they're using computers all the time. I went into a space that had these wonderful window line. They're all the shades were drawn. And why? Because they're computer programmers. The light was an anathema to them.
Okay.
So, but people want to go see and they want to get a feel for the space. And once you go through that, you do learn a lot. You find out what they like, what they don't like, what type of lobbies are good, you know, various factors that are they could not articulate that they do articulate in their expression when they see something.
Okay.
And for me, that's a hugely valuable amount of information that I get.
And
then I go back and sit down with them and say, what do you really need? And then at that point, we can really refine our search. Now we have a sense of the type of building they want, the amount of light they like.
I mean, neighborhood can also be important,
neighborhood.
Right? And that doesn't only apply in New York City, but what part of the city you want to be in can be very important. Yep. Where are your employees coming from? Where are the people you're serving coming from, right? I mean, neighborhood?
Yep, neighborhood's a big factor. And especially, too, when you're negotiating rents, because some neighborhoods are more expensive than others. So tenants will, you know, may want to stay in the area they're in that they've been in 50 years, but that area now is the most expensive area in the city, and they can't afford to stay in that. So now they really are forced to look at other areas. And it also helps in the negotiation. You want an alternative. If you get an alternative that you're willing to go to in a less expensive area, that's big leverage to use against your current landlord.
Okay. So how do we then get to the state where we start making offers so that we can get these bona fide alternatives to use in our negotiation with where we are?
Well, so we've looked at a bunch of spaces. Mm-hmm. We make sure that they meet the technical requirements of the tenant, of the organization. We then look at the financial aspects of each transaction, because at the end of the day, it's the money decision that is the last decision that is made. So you have five or six spaces that work on a technical level. You can either do one of two ways. You can make offers to each landlord, including your own, or you can send each owner an RFP, a request for proposal, and have them make an offer to you.
Okay, now that's interesting, but that probably only applies to organizations that might be looking for a certain minimum space. If you're just looking for a couple thousand square feet, the odds of you successfully delivering a request for proposals to a landlord are pretty slim. Well, you can deliver them, but the odds of getting a response, quite slim.
There's a couple of factors that go into that. Okay. One is how much space. If you're taking 200,000 square feet perfectly, every landlord wants you, they'll stand on their heads, they'll answer an RFP.
Okay.
In a soft market, you can also, even if you're a smaller tenant, you can also ask for an RFP. In a tight market, unlikely. You have to make offers. You have to get the landlord's attention.
When you say smaller, let's say smaller in what is a soft market in a lot of places now, would that include, like, say, 10 to 15,000 square
feet?
Yeah,
I would say that's anything under 10, you would probably make an offer. But 10 and over, you can certainly, it's not embarrassing to have a landlord respond to an RFP.
Okay, and then so that RFP lays out what your requirements are and
it's just the reverse of an offer. An offer you're putting in, I'll pay, you know, $20 a square foot in rent. In the RFP, you're saying what will the rent be for all of these things we were requesting? You know, 10,000 square feet on the fourth floor, you know, in the southwest quadrant of the building. You know, you specify exactly what you want, and the landlord will respond to that.
Okay, so I think this is a good point. Whether we're doing the RFP or whether we're making an offer, to talk about some of these other variables that you can work with besides trying to negotiate the rent, like build-outs is one.
What we call in the profession concessions.
Okay.
So one is the landlord will build the space, or the landlord will give you $50 a square foot for you to build the space. They'll give you free rent, not just to build the space, but after the space is built and you're in the space, and that free rent offsets your expenses for architects, for moving, things like that.
Okay, so you can negotiate the period of free rent, how many months that's going to last. Okay.
There's a myriad of clauses in a lease, which I'm sure you'll get to later. But, you know, the electric clause can be done in a variety of ways. There are escalations that can be be measured.
Okay, jargon jail. What's an escalation?
The landlord in the lease always has some sort of escalation factor that corresponds to the cost of operating the building. So as the building operating expenses go up over time, the increase is usually passed on to the tenants.
Okay, but we can negotiate whether it is and how it's measured. So there are actually formulas then, is that right?
There are numerous formulas.
Okay, okay. What are some other, let's not go into the formulas, that's mathematics. What are some of the other variables that we can be negotiating around? This is interesting.
Well, there's a lot of, certainly the rent is the major one, and that has the major impact. But electric escalations, TIs, which is the construction, how that construction
TI,
is done.
TI, what does that stand for?
Tenant installation.
Tenant installation, which is building. Okay.
Yeah, how the space is delivered. Is it delivered raw? Is it delivered partially finished? Is it delivered with bathrooms, with air conditioning? All those things have to be negotiated.
Really? So a space doesn't automatically come with bathrooms and air conditioning?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Okay. Interesting. Okay. So,
and then if you have specific requirements that need to be built in, you have a vault that you want because you're a lab and you want plumbing for your sinks. That also can be negotiated into the rent if required.
Okay. We have just a couple minutes left. Let's talk about working with a broker, a real estate broker, and creating incentives for that person to work for you. First of all, who does a broker work for?
The law is that the whoever pays you is the principal, and whoever receives the payment is the agent. So the broker gets paid by the landlord.
Okay, that
traditionally
may, that may be something that now
so
is that,
that
only
makes
in,
a broker.
Wait, hold on a sec. Look, the guy's taking over the show. Does that make a I think people are not familiar with that. So a broker who's spending time with you looking at space, they're actually getting paid by the landlord or the owner of the building?
Yeah, it's like if you're buying a house, it's the same thing. The nice lady shows you the house and ingratiates herself with you and makes, you know, you're her best friend now. She's representing the seller. It's the same with the broker.
Okay.
Unless you hire that broker to be your agent. And if you hire that broker, you have a piece of paper that says, George Grace is my exclusive broker. He represents us. His fiduciary responsibilities is to us, even though he's getting paid by a third party. The law is that if you have a written document, it negates the common law of principal agency.
Okay, based on, so we're no longer then looking at who pays the broker.
Right.
We're then looking at that piece of paper.
Exactly.
Okay. And is that something that nonprofits looking for space should have?
It's interesting. Nonprofits are the more progressive groups. Because they want clarity, they want transparency, and they want incentives aligned with theirs. Better than even for-profits, they tend to want to have these relationships and want them in writing and want their understanding. So it's clear to the executive director and it's clear to the board. So that they are getting the best information for them to make the best decision.
Okay.
So they're getting good information, and they can make a decision properly.
All right. So that's something that nonprofits should look for.
And do.
Okay. We have to stop there. George Grace is principal of GE Grace & Company, founded in 1998. This is our first segment of Learning Office Lease Lessons. George, pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. Stay with us. After the break, it's Tony's Take Two, and then we'll continue Learning Office Lease Lessons with Robert J. Smith and Kate Pala. So stay with me.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Are you concerned about the future of your business or career? Would you like it all to just be better? Well, the way to do that is through better communication. And the best way to do that is training from the team at Improving Communications. This is Larry Sharp, host of the Ivory Tower Radio Program and director at Improving Communications. Does your office need better leadership, customer service, sales, or maybe better writing or speaking skills? Could they be better at dealing with confrontation, conflicts, and touchy subjects? All are covered here at Improving Communications. If you're in the New York City area, stop by one of our public classes or get your human resources in touch with us. The website is improvingcommunications.com. That's improvingcommunications.com. Improve your professional environment. Be more effective. Be happier and make more money. Improving Communications. That's the answer.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Welcome back. It's time for Tony's Take Two at roughly 32 minutes after the hour. A little about my blog this week. There's a stand-up comedy video of mine from July. I did a show at Gotham Comedy Club on West 23rd Street in Manhattan a couple of months ago, and that video is on my blog at mpgadv.com. Also, I want to remind you that we are media partners for the Next Gen Charity Conference. That's on November 17th and 18th. Here in New York at the Tribeca Performing Arts Center. Some of the speakers are Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, and Craig Connects, and he's been a guest on this show. Rabbi Shmuley Botich, America's rabbi, and also Charles Best, the leader of DonorsChoose.org. That's just two of about 15 or 17 speakers that they have throughout the day on November 17th. And then there are other sessions on November 18th. I'll be there interviewing the speakers as they come off stage, and you'll hear those interviews on the show afterwards. So the conference is November 17th and 18th. You can get information and get your tickets at nextgencharity.com. And that is Tony's Take Two for Friday, September 16th. With me now is Robert Smith. Robert is an attorney, opened his law practice in 1993. He has represented renters, buyers, and sellers of commercial and residential properties. He's also an experienced real estate and commercial litigator. With me also is Kate Pela. Kate is executive director of Dance New Amsterdam, a contemporary dance organization in New York City. Kate, Robert, welcome.
Hi, Tony. Welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure to have you. We're continuing learning office lease lessons. Now, Robert has reviewed Dance New Amsterdam's lease. And Robert, there was something that you wanted to talk about in terms of when rent starts, and we're going to get to that shortly. Let's just start a little bit with the lease history, maybe, Kate, if you want to just say a little bit about how this lease came about.
Well, initially, Dance New Amsterdam was a dance space center, and it was uptown a little bit on Broadway, 451 Broadway, and they needed a new lease, because their lease was running out and they needed a new place. And they were invited down to help participate in the revitalization of Lower Manhattan after 9/11. Mm-hmm. And so that was the initial sort of research that was going into this, and the city was open to bringing nonprofits and cultural organizations to help the revitalization. And DNA, they rebranded, changed their name to Dance New Amsterdam for the area they were moving into, and were the first cultural organization to risk the move down into the, you know, the aftermath of what was going on down in Lower Manhattan.
Okay. And they were moving into a public space.
Yes.
Publicly owned building. And that
it's a city-owned building. Right. It's a Sun building.
Okay.
Yes.
And we're going to talk a little about that because that has some implications for for lease negotiations. So turning, Robert, to you, one of the things you wanted to mention was in terms of when rent starts to be paid. What does the lease say, and what can we learn from that?
This goes actually dovetails with some of the things that George was talking about earlier.
Excellent.
When he mentioned that one of the things that can be discussed are either rent concessions or an allowance for a period of time that would permit the tenant to do negotiations or renovations of the space, and while that was going on, to have a forbearance of rent, to basically not be able to pay rent while that's happening. So it's essentially they take the space, they sign the lease, and then there is a period of free rent. And during that period of time, the tenant is doing the work to customize the space, to build it out, and that is one of the things that was happening here. Actually, it seemed like, and when I looked at the lease, and I know you mentioned this too when you and I first discussed this, that it seemed like a generous period of time that was given to DNA for its build out. They got 16 months of free rent.
Okay, that does sound like quite a long time.
It does.
A year and 4 months, right?
It does. But the issues that DNA was facing at the beginning of its term meant that, as it turns out, it wasn't long enough.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think that one of the important lessons is to try to build in as much flexibility in terms of time to tie it in rather to an event to say, okay, when we are done with our construction, part of which is coming from city funding.
Okay.
And here you have a city-owned building also.
Right.
Tie that in rather than a specific period of time.
So, Kate, you were in this public building, and this is where some of the implications of being in a publicly owned, city-owned building are, and you had to get permits. Right, and permission for the build-outs, and that took a lot of time.
Well, when you renovate, every organization has to get permits to build out. There were just some walls that we hit with the entrance because there are so many students coming in. The entrance to the building initially was a public entrance to Department of Buildings on 280 Broadway. We ended up having to find another entrance in the building, which meant we had to expand the original amount of space and redesign the plans.
Okay, so this all added to the time.
Exactly, and then getting new permits because you have to do it on the original design. And then,
there's permitting, right, and there's always going to be something unanticipated in build-outs, and it sounds like yours was extreme,
yes,
having to find a new entrance. And so, Robert, that's your point about trying not to negotiate a finite time, because as it turns out, even 16 months wasn't enough time.
It's true, and I think that any time that you're talking about build-outs, and as Kate mentioned, when you have permits, anybody has to get permits when they're making changes and when they're doing building. The Department of Buildings is particularly overworked and overburdened, and they get tremendous number of requests and things that they have to look at. So, you know, you need to have an expediter. You need to get things through. It's a time-consuming process. Added to that is that for DNA, their funding was also public funding. So I think any time that you have the city involved in multiple layers of a transaction, you have multiple opportunities for delay, even more than you would with other parties.
Kate, what was the nature of that public funding? City agencies? Funding Dance New
Amsterdam? It came through numerous public and private, but we got it through the elected officials, through HUD, Lower Manhattan Development Corporation. So if you look at all these layers of public funding, there's rules and regulations and reports that have to be procedures and reports filed and followed to get these, and this is adds to delay possibilities.
Right. Now, Robert, what's the likelihood that a landlord is going to agree to flexibility in terms of when the lease payments start?
Different circumstances will lead to different results. In this particular instance...
What a great lawyer answer. I love that.
Thank you. No problem. We do what we can. In this particular instance, we had a situation where the space that DNA was coming into had been vacant for many years. I think it was about 10 years from what Kate had mentioned. So you had a tenant coming in that had a better bargaining position than it might if it was coming into space that had been used for a period of time, or if there was a lot of competition from other entities that were looking to move in. Here, DNA was the only game in town. They wanted to move into this space. the landlord, in this case the city, or there was another entity that was in between the city and DNA that was technically a tenant and subtenant situation. So DNA had a lot of leverage. And I think given that, it was in a better position to dictate some of the terms to the landlord, including the term about, look, when we are going to start paying rent, when we're going to be ready to start paying rent. If they didn't have all of that advantage, I don't think they would have been in as good a position. And you know, often that's okay. The case. And I think that's, you know, again, going into some of the things George was talking about.
Yeah. There is a caveat to add to this. Whenever anybody gets public funding, the use of that funds to rebuild or to renovate or whatever you do with it is the life of the bond, because you get bonds to get public funding. The government gets a bond, they get the money, and they give it away to nonprofit organizations. And there was, and that agreement has to be between the landlord and the city, because it's public funding and the agency that's giving the funding. And so I think this points back to, again, public funding, publicly owned building, and a commercial landlord in between as with this whole process. So that complicated things, but it also makes it a little odd sometimes in trying to understand these covenants of what is the life of the bond and these sort of things, because things can be manipulated much easier within a system.
Now, am I correct? You were going to be subletting this space?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. And that, Robert, that has some implications, right? Because now we're talking about, we're dealing with the tenant who has the lease and not directly with the building owner.
That's true. And again, that follows up on some of the things that George was talking about in terms of what the incentives are and what the considerations are. It's more of a concern to the overlandlord, the owner of the building. And in this case, that was the city of New York. And so it's more of a concern to that entity than it is here to the tenant, so to speak, because this was a tenant-subtenant situation. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have the same direct level of incentive that the city did. But again, because the city owned the building, I think that was a consideration that had to be brought into play here. And I don't really think it was as much as it might have at the time that the lease was initially discussed.
Okay. We're going to take a break. We're talking with Kate Pala and Robert Smith, continuing our discussion about learning office lease lessons. So stay with us.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Do you want to enhance your company's web presence with an eye-catching and unique website design? Would you like to incorporate professional video marketing or mobile marketing into your organization's marketing campaign? Mission 101 Media offers a unique marketing experience that will set you apart from your competitors, magnify your brand exposure, and enhance your current marketing efforts. Their services include video production and editing, web design, graphic design, photography, social media management, and now introducing mobile marketing. Their motto is, we do whatever it takes to make our clients happy. Contact them today at mission101media.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your aptly named host. Robert, we're talking about some of the other variables that can be negotiated, whether by Dance New Amsterdam or generally, besides just square footage and rent. What are some of the other variables that a tenant can be negotiating around?
A lot of them revolve around liability issues. I think that in a number of instances, landlords will put provisions in leases that essentially try to pass through all liability to tenants. So as a for instance, always insisting the tenants have insurance and saying that if there is a requirement, for instance, and we discussed that if there are construction items that the landlord is required to undertake, either for reasons of statutory changes or insurance requirements, for instance, they have to put in sprinklers, they need compliance with the Americans with Disability Act, there may be construction that goes with that, and the landlord is going to try to pass that through to the tenant to make the tenant liable to basically pay for the changes
in
the space.
So changes to the building structure can be passed through to the tenant? The tenant's only going to be there for 5 or 10 years, but still that can be a requirement in the lease?
Yes, and I think that's the kind of thing that, again, at the beginning, you have to be able to step forward and say, no, this is something that you're doing as a landlord, and it's for your benefit, and you're required to do it. We don't want to have to pay for that.
Kate, I see you nodding. What, sounds familiar?
We actually act somewhat as a landlord of our own space. So if the HVAC system breaks down, that's our responsibility to fix. If anything within our space, if something goes wrong, we have to manage it. I mean, the elevator is a different story, but that's the one thing.
So you're talking about terms in your lease,
yes.
not because you're leasing, not because you're subletting space to others, but within your lease.
Within our lease, yes.
You're responsible for those things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Robert, what's the likelihood that a building owner is going to negotiate some of that away?
You know, again, it goes back to the circumstances. And here, I think where you had a tenant with leverage coming in, you may, again, be in a better position at that point. You know, the landlord is going to say, this is a benefit for everyone in the building. It's not just, you know, for me as a landlord, yes, I'm being required to do it. But that means that you're subject to that as well, tenant. And so I want you to take that on. So I think that's a rough go in a lot of instances for a tenant to be able to assert that. But I do think that it's a point of the negotiation. And again, depending upon the relative position of the parties and
right.
the relative strength of their posture overall,
mm-hmm.
that's going to determine how likely a landlord is to give in on something like that.
Okay. And any one of these things that we're talking about, they all get put into the mix so that if you don't succeed in one variable, you might use that as say, okay, well, if you're not going to relent on the pass-throughs of the required construction, then give us a break on this other thing.
Right.
So what might be one of the other things?
Sometimes it's insurance requirements.
Let's talk a little about insurance.
What'll happen is that a landlord is going to want a tenant to have a certain amount of insurance to cover liability for property damage, for personal injury damage. And it's not always a reciprocal thing. And what I mean by that is that what happens if there's damage in a space that's caused by the landlord's negligence?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the landlord is going to want to have the tenant essentially even take responsibility for that and try to absolve themselves of responsibility. Sometimes the landlord will say any recovery that you can have can only be from us in our interest in this building. Normally, a landlord's interest in the building is going to be minimal.
So they're trying to limit their liability to their financial interest or their financial stake in the building?
Correct.
What does that mean?
Well, what it means is
talking about jargon jail. We'll put you in jargon prison state. I don't even know what that. What are we talking about?
You know, you're not understanding, Tony. That's all. No. Essentially, what it means is that if there is liability that could be assessed against the landlord, and you know, let's say it's $1 million worth of liability, the landlord may only have a real ownership interest in the building that's minimal because it has a mortgage, for instance.
Oh, okay.
And if it has a mortgage, then it doesn't really have equity in the building and it doesn't have assets anywhere else.
Okay.
You as a tenant want to be in a position to tell the landlord, if something like that happens, we want to be insured as well. We want to be covered for a situation like that. We want you to have at least the same measure of insurance coverage that you're insisting that we have on that space.
Okay.
So that's something that you can negotiate, because otherwise, you know, the landlord does something wrong. You go after the landlord. The landlord said, sorry, I don't even have 5 cents to pay toward this. Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you are essentially out of luck. And Kate, then you have to. Yeah.
Kate, did you have any insurance-related issues around this lease?
Well, it's interesting because we're in a building with multiple tenants, and mm-hmm. above us is the Department of Buildings. And we just went through kind of an issue of, I mean, you're laughing, but it's fascinating.
It's a laugh of pain.
It is. A fifth floor had a leak in a pipe, which came all the way down and then pooled into our...
You're on
I
the
guess,
fourth floor?
We're on the second floor.
Oh, second.
So, but it came all the way through the walls.
Right.
We found the leak, but then it pooled at DNA and then went down into Modell's. And then it started out that we were liable for that, but then when we did the research, which we become responsible for, it's very interesting who's responsible. It's like the last place that it came down. It's like, well, we don't care. You, it came from above. So then we have to do the research and go, but it came from you guys. And they said, well, now you have to prove it. It's fascinating how people pass things off, and you have to be very careful and conscientious, and it's time consuming.
And there's Dance New Amsterdam, too, versus Modell's down below.
Yes.
I imagine they have quite a legal contingency.
Yes.
Contingent.
They have that, a mob of lawyers.
Yeah. And you have a mob of dancers and young people learning dance.
And you know, Tony,
they're not that dangerous.
The interesting thing, too, is that when you see the leases that are produced, they're probably going to be about 70 or 75 pages long. There's a lot that goes into them, and there's a lot that has to be reviewed, and there's a lot that can be missed and passed over. So it is imperative that from the first moment when that lease comes in, that every word and line is examined, because every one of them could contain some type of clause that's going to imperil that tenant at some point in time. So it really requires diligence and vigilance to go through every piece of it.
Okay, Kate. Yeah, go ahead.
And to that point, I think you really need to be intimately involved in a sense with the process as the executive director and the board. Because there are also paragraphs when I first, because I didn't sign this lease. I inherited all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went through the lease, I found like paragraphs which neutralized other paragraphs which seemed to protect the organization, which I found really interesting.
Did Dance New Amsterdam have a leasing specialist, an attorney advising them? Do you
yes,
know?
I
know
we
you
did.
Didn't. You weren't.
Yeah.
You weren't running the
we
shop.
We did,
then,
and I, you know, it's a very complicated thing because we have the overlease and then the lease, and deadlines to get the funding and deadlines to move into a new space and this whole really camaraderie about revitalization of Lower Manhattan. Yeah. So I think all of that sort of thing really like can put the fear of God in a sense or the universe into some, you know, a group. It's like, oh my God, if we don't do it right now and we don't sign, we won't get the money and then we won't have a life. And, you know, it's something that has to be taken very slowly and being very involved, as both the lawyers have said.
Right, and more rationally maybe than some of the emotion that could be swept up into it.
Yeah, but exactly. Okay. But I think that this was a difficult time. It was very emotional for everyone.
We have just about a minute left, and Robert, there's something I wanted to talk about in terms of it not being even an obligation of an owner to provide water and electricity. Just in a minute left, can you explain that and what we need to look out for?
Well, sometimes there is a clause that landlords will put in that says that they're not obligated to provide certain what you would consider to be basic services. And normally they do provide those services, but there may be times where for some reason they're interrupted. And at that point, the landlord is saying, well, you know, sorry, we don't have an obligation to provide it for you. And again, that's one of those things where you say, look, we can't function if those things aren't provided. Your obligation is to provide certain basic services for us. You have to guarantee that. You can't tell us that you don't have an obligation to do that. So that is something that has to be discussed right off the bat. It seems like it's something that should be automatic. It's not.
Yeah, water and electricity.
Absolutely.
Right. We have to leave it there. Robert J. Smith opened his law practice in 1993, representing renters, buyers, and sellers of commercial and residential properties. Robert, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Tony. Appreciate it.
Pleasure. And Kate Pala is executive director of Dance New Amsterdam, contemporary dance organization in New York City. Kate, really, thank you very much for sharing DNA's sort of woeful story about the lease. About
yeah.
the lease.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for sharing that story. And I want to thank your publicist, Amber, for recommending the idea of the show. This whole show was really pitched to me by Amber, and I like the idea. I hope that you will be with me next week when we will be talking about prospect research on women donors. The last of my interviews from Fundraising Day 2011, Samantha Cohen from the American Civil Liberties Union will be with me to talk about finding information about women that is valuable but often hidden. And the second half of the show next week, learning lobbying limits. Our legal contributors from San Francisco, Jean Takagi and Emily Chan, explain the limitations on lobbying for charities. We all know charities aren't supposed to lobby, but what activities constitute lobbying? Can you have a petition? Can you say things at events or in personal face-to-face meetings? What can't you say? They'll break all these lobbying limitations down for us. You can keep up with what's coming up on the show. Sign up for our email alerts on our Facebook page, obviously facebook.com, and then the name of this show. Did you like today's show? Please like us on the Facebook page. You've been listening live, but you can also listen archive, iTunes. You can subscribe, listen on the device of your choice at any time. You'll find us on iTunes at nonprofitradio.net. On Twitter, you can follow me. I hope you were with us today. The hashtag is nonprofitradio, or you can follow me personally, and I'm tweeting often about philanthropy and the show as well. And use that hashtag, nonprofitradio. Use it recklessly. The creative producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is Claire Meyerhoff. Our line producer and the owner of Talking Alternative Broadcasting is Sam Leibowitz. Our social media is by Regina Walton of Organic Social Media. Regina has arrived back in the San Francisco area after driving cross-country from New York. We miss you already, but fortunately, you're going to stay with the show. This is Tony Martinetti, Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Hope you'll be with me next Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, on Talking Alternative Broadcasting, always at talkingalternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Looking to meet Mr. or Mrs. Right, but still haven't found the one? Want to make your current relationship as fulfilling as possible? Then please tune in on Mondays at 10 a.m. for Love in the Morning with Marnie Gallison. As a professional matchmaker, I've seen it all. Tune in as we discuss dating, relationships, and more. Start your week off right with Love in the Morning with Marnie Gallison on TalkingAlternative.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Are you fed up with talking points rhetoric? Every way you turn, it's left or right spin, ideology, no reality. In fact, it's ideology over intellect. No more. It's time for the truth. Join me, Larry Sharp, a.k.a. The Neo-Sage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 Eastern, for the Ivory Tower radio program. In the Ivory Tower, we'll discuss what's important to you, society, politics, business, and family. It's provocative talk for the realist and the skeptic who want to know what's really going on, what does it mean, and what can be done about it. So gain special access to the Ivory Tower and listen to me, Larry Sharp, your Neo-Sage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11, New York time. Go to ivorytowerradio.com for details. That's ivorytowerradio.com. The Ivory Tower is a great place to visit for both entertainment and education. Listen in, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11. It will make you smarter.
Do you want to enhance your company's web presence with an eye-catching and unique website design? Would you like to incorporate professional video marketing or mobile marketing into your organization's marketing campaign? Mission 101 Media offers a unique marketing experience that will set you apart from your competitors, magnify your brand exposure, and enhance your current marketing efforts. Their services include video production and editing, web design, graphic design, photography, social media management, and now introducing mobile marketing. Their motto is, we do whatever it takes to make our clients happy. Contact them today at mission101media.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.